Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael checking in with you. The date is May 8th, and we are experiencing the stay-at-home orders in the state of Minnesota. So this episode is just a little bit different than the usual episodes. Claudia, Katrin, and myself found together from our respective home offices. And with that, the sound quality of this episode has changed just a little bit. So of course, I do ask for your understanding that we were not quite able to produce the usual quality, but we will do that as soon as we are able to gather back at the GAI house. With that being said, enjoy today's episode. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries,
Germany,
Deutschland,
Austria,
Österreich, Switzerland,
Schweiz,
blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey.
This is a little bit of a different style of podcast. It is the social distance podcast of the GAI, so welcome to Here and There. We are at our respective living rooms, home offices, and of course, we still invite you to come along to today's show. As always, I'm not alone, but I do have the two ladies with me who usually accompany me through a podcast. And that being said, Katrin, welcome to the show.
Oh, mine.
And Claudia, welcome remotely.
Grüß Gott.
It is different, isn't it? We look at each other not in the Damensalon, but on the webcam. It's a strange new normal, isn't it?
It's the wonders of technology, right?
And I would like to say so many things right now, but you know, we're just grateful this is working.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just reel it back a couple of years, and I think this is really one of the things that perhaps gets a little bit forgotten right now, is that that wonder of technology does allow us to stay connected. And I've heard from several of my students, actually, that they now have more meetings, FaceTime calls, Zoom calls, Google Hangout meetings with their families across the country than they actually have talked before. And that is the wonder of technology.
Yeah, and for teaching as well, no? I mean,
absolutely.
The classes that I'm teaching right now, it's a completely new experience. Everybody has to get used to it, teachers and students. But yeah, as you said, 3, 4, 5 years ago, this would have not happened.
We would have all just called in and hope to somehow make it happen. Claudia, did you hear anything from students outside of what we have as anecdotal evidence out of the classroom? What is the feedback so far?
In overall, the feedback from students has been very positive. People really appreciated the fact that we were able to basically switch on a dime within a week to move from in-person classes to online classes. And everybody was very gracious and realized that the format had to change and that the teachers were learning along with the students on how to do this online. But I think the results are that now this new round of start classes that we just kicked off about a month ago is going well. We've added a couple of online only classes that are consistently filling up. So I think people are really coming to this new format, and it does actually allow us also to have students in much different areas and regions. Katrin actually just taught a class where she had people from, I think, Germany and one person from a Navy base in Africa or something, right?
Oh, yeah, wow. Correct. Mm-hmm.
How was that?
Across all sorts of time zones. I mean, it was awesome. It was not complicated. I mean, it really doesn't matter then, you know, if somebody's sitting here next door or apparently in Africa on a Navy base or some sort of military base.
Yep. So that being said, obviously, we will go back to having in-person classes. So to me, this is an opportunity to add to our portfolio of classes. And there will always be in-person classes. And as soon as we can, we will hold those again in a safe and socially distanced manner. But now it also allows us to do online classes, which for people who travel or who live further away or who appreciate the fact that they can do it from their home office, so basically we're using this opportunity to expand.
Yeah, and that's also from my side, it's been going actually swimmingly, and a couple of things actually have improved. The drive time.
Yep. There is an advantage. The commute is great. The commute is great, yeah.
I've seen a couple of beers being popped open, so there, of course, is also no concern, and it is very much in keeping with the German tradition.
On your desk or on your student's desk?
On my student's desk. At least mine, you can't see. It's outside of the camera view. it seems to be a very relaxed atmosphere. And people, at least from my perspective, have tapped into this very quickly. Notwithstanding, of course, the desire to go back once it's socially and distantly responsible. So, of course, we will keep you posted as this develops. Let's talk grammar. Catherine. Since the little side note, when Catherine sent me a text message earlier saying, hey, we're going to do this and such in grammar, she immediately suggested, since I'm Austrian, that I should learn alongside. So yes, lay it on me. What do I need to know?
It is a rather short chapter, but we're talking about strong verbs that also have a vowel change. So it's an irregular verb, but that in some form has a vowel change in the different forms. And I actually made a Quizlet set, or whatever you want to call it, Quizlet set, I think.
Yeah, set.
Mm-hmm. With 11 verbs that are very, very commonly used. So if you have those down, that will carry you a long way in speaking German. They have all the basic form, the infinitive. Then they have the he, she, it form, which will show you how the vowel changes in the present tense. They will have the simple past form, and then they will have the perfect form. So you can just memorize them one after the other. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Quizlet, you can either download an app, or you can just go into your browser and do it from there. And you have different possibilities. Maybe do a game with it. Maybe just do your, you know, rather traditional learning where you have flashcards back and forth so you can memorize things. But all in all, very pleasant learning environment, very low pressure, but very successful, in my opinion. I've done this with Italian. It's going to be linked to our podcast. So if you're interested, great thing to do while you're waiting for something. I don't know, end of the, you know, stay at home order or something.
Or in line at the grocery store.
Before you can get in. Try it out. And again, it's only 11 verbs. So it's not very many, but they have a far, far and wide reach.
Can you give us an example or two?
Lesen, for example, would be one, to read, right? So ich lese, but then it would be du liest. So we have the vowel change between the first person and the second person. And then the simple past would be ich las, and the perfect ich habe gelesen. So they're all a little bit different. And it's important to memorize that so they're handy when you need them. And in my work as a German teacher, I see that the participle a lot of times is more of a guessing game than really, you know, knowledge being dug out from somewhere in your brain. So this is a good opportunity to just kind of go down into that and memorize the ones that are most frequently used.
Is there a key, so to speak, or something that perhaps gives you a better understanding as to when a vowel change happens, under which circumstances, what changes to what vowel? Is there anything that students can hold on to? Or is it simply the one answer that nobody really likes to hear, but that frequently actually does apply? It's just you got to know those, and the easiest ways to learn them by heart.
Something for students to hang on to is hope. Because we all know hope dies last, right? Die Hoffnung stirbt zuletzt. Other than that, I'm afraid there's a lot of memorization going on.
Yep.
And especially with these 11, if you have these down, some other ones will follow a similar pattern. So it always helps to learn patterns. And then once you continue with expanding your vocabulary, you can fall back on the ones that you already learned and see, oh, you know, this works like such and such a verb, and then just apply that to that.
So the short answer is just nothing to hold on to other than hope.
That being said, as I emphasize in class all the time too, German does get easier over time because the patterns just repeat and repeat and repeat. Yeah. And once you have those down, really, it gets easier.
So the short answer really is the wonderful German word that you should have down pat anyway, nein.
Nein. Sorry. Tut mir leid.
Oh, man. Yeah, and I mean, that is the challenge. I mean, there are certain things where you can, of course, hold on to, and there are perhaps some blueprint patterns across the German language that you can truly say, okay, this is how it works. But for vowel changes and some of the article structures, of course, the best thing is just continue to learn and continue to immerse yourself. And for instance, one of the things that I do in my class, particularly in the start classes, is to Germanize your house, Germanize your environment. Take sticky notes, stick them on the fridge, and what is the fridge in German with the appropriate article. The dash in the car, change your phone if you're really out for an adventure. Change your phone to German and just have Google Maps give you directions in German, particularly when you know where you're going to go anyway, so you're not going to get lost. But it gives you this constant ear training. So when you Germanize your environment, things also get a little bit easier, particularly with the lack of immersion that we're otherwise experiencing.
Yep. Yeah, and just break it down into smaller chunks. I mean, nobody expects anyone to learn all the irregular verbs, you know, at once. Just put it into smaller chunks and something will stick.
And like Katrin says, if you start with those 11, if they get you, you know, most of the way, then keep, you know, then go with that.
So to reiterate, if you click down in this podcast recording on your favorite player in the show notes, there will be a link to that Quizlet set. Again, Quizlet is an app that is available to you free of charge. The GI does have a pro level account, of course, so it does give us the opportunity to put a little more in there and to make sure that you are served in the best possible manner. As we're going forward through the seasons, which of course at the GEI house, there's a lot of things that are going on, and we are certainly working on those as they apply, and there are future updates to come in the monthly newsletters and so forth. But one of the things that inevitably I talk about in every single class, I don't know about you, Katrin, is music.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't sing. Thankfully, we'd have nobody in class. My musical understanding in terms of instrument is I can barely tap my fingers. But it's interesting when we look at music and how we are actually identified as Germans, Austrian, Swiss nationals, what people think from a stereotypical perspective, what we listen to and how we do music, and whether that actually is true or if it is not. Let's just check in with Katrin, particularly in northern Germany. What style are we looking at in terms of stereotypical music? And then how are those stereotypes being broken?
For the north, I think the Bavarian Oompa Volksmusik is not quite as strong. We don't really do that, not even at folks festivals or anything like that. Schlager is very popular still, which is a campy style of German music, very popular in the 60s, 70s, and beginning of the 80s.
And it's like a version of pop music, right? It's like
it's great party music. Everybody knows the words. They are not anything that you would have to, you know, use your intellect much about. But they're great to party along and to dance along. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, we have the classics of contemporary music, which would be the Herbert Grönemeyers, Heinz-Rudolf Kunze's, or interestingly, we talked about that a little bit, the Scorpions, also a German band, although they don't sing in German. Fear in the Slaughterhouse would fall under that as well. Yes, Claudia would like to say something.
What about, since you are from the North, I mean, when I think of the North, I think of sailor songs, right? I mean, because there's, you know, I mean, some of the, instead of the traditional oompa music or that, but, you know, some of these, you know, songs about men going out to sea and that kind of stuff, because that is kind of something that happens in the northern part of Germany.
That was a big part of Schlager as well. There was this guy named Freddy Quinn, who sang all about sea. I don't know if he's ever seen a ship from the inside. I'm not trying to be mean here. It's very possible he has. I just don't know enough about him.
Yes.
But this is also a good 50 years ago, maybe. We certainly have folk songs and very beautiful ones at that, but they're not necessarily played at like big festivals or something. They tend to be on the calmer side. People learn them maybe in school, and they definitely are German culture, but much less in your face than, you know, oompa music, I would
kind
say.
Kind of melancholy, right? Because a lot of those, a lot of times those stories don't end well.
In true German fashion, yes. And even though they're very traditional German folk songs that are hundreds of years old, German pop singers a lot of times sing them at the end of their concerts because everybody knows them, everybody can sing along, and it's just a nice ending to an evening.
Immediately when you say Schlagermusik, my head goes towards very contemporary American country, just the European version, so to speak. Not the same instruments, not the same melody to it, but I think at the end of the day, the same kind of message, perhaps. It's the broken hearts, the cars, the hardship of life. I think the story in itself doesn't necessarily change, but the intonation of it changes, perhaps.
Not just country, but I think just light pop music, easy listening pop type music too. You know, it's just like Katrin says, it's not intended to be music that makes you think or that is there to change the world. It's music just for easy listening, toe tapping, singing along.
And that's emotional involvement.
Yeah.
Let me give you two names that come to mind, and let me just gauge what your reaction is to them. One of which is Heino.
Yes.
Katrin just rolled her eyes.
Yes, Heino. Okay.
Heino is not even Schlager. Heino is something that my grandparents used to listen to, although the records with him had to be covered up because my grandmother could not stand looking at his face. So he sings very heavy German folk songs, a lot of them with quite a bit of nationalism in them. So that I would not call Schlager.
Interesting.
That is a bit of a different genre. Like
okay.
People that take German folk songs very seriously, that's kind of what he sang.
The second stereotypical name that I have for you would be the Zillertaler Schürzenjäger.
Who?
Which is an Austrian group. Katrin's surprised face gives away that you don't know of them.
Oh, I know them. Never would have thought you would mention them.
Oh, I am multi-layered, ma'am. The Zillertaler Schützenjäger, which verbatimly translates to the Zillertal, which is essentially a valley in Austria, and Schützenjäger would be the kilt chasers, are a contemporary pop group taking a new spin on what you would actually identify as classical German, Austrian sort of oompa music that you hear at another cultural phenomenon called the Frühschoppen. And the Frühschoppen usually is something that you find in the rural regions, Saturday mornings, and I think Sunday mornings perhaps as well, where you show up in a big tent, akin to a tent of the Oktoberfest. There's a band on the stage and they play sort of this typical, traditional, very, you know, identified sort of music.
Folksy type music. Folksy.
And I think that is where people get hung up on. This is sort of what we are being identified with. Yep. Whereas the reality to come into true pop music, into contemporary music altogether, is a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about Schlager and truly contemporary Schlager, of course, one name comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Who has
Helene
dominated,
Fischer.
Exactly, who has dominated German Schlager for, I don't know, 2 decades or something? I mean, yeah. I don't know. Who, I will admit, there are few singers that one can sing along to better in the car. Or, you know, when you've had a couple glasses of wine or something. I mean, I would never listen to that, I don't know, you know, under normal circumstances, but with a party going on. I mean, also her, you know, lyrics are not deep by any stretch of the imagination, but it's fun music. But then on the other hand, you have the truly contemporary German musicians who are the younger generation now. Who make very relevant music, a lot with political messages, a lot of hip-hop, a lot of rap. And a lot of that is actually in the German language. I mean, if I'm talking about Sarah Lesch or Juju or Von Wegen Lisbeth or Großstadtgeflüster, I've played some of these in my classes as well. That is very interesting, very new and just out of the mainstream music.
Yeah, and I think that's the part, right? I mean, just like Germany is more than what a lot of people see at these large festivals or at Oktoberfest, where you have the large beer tents and the Dirndl and the Lederhosen and the music that is played there. So is the music scene much, much, much more diverse. For example, one big thing, because I just, you know, polled my relatives too, a big thing in music in Germany is like that club dance techno music as well. That is huge and continues to be huge and continues to evolve into its own art form in a way. And one thing that I always like to mention to people as well, it's been a few years, you know, like almost 40 since that song came out. It's, you know, a lot of people think about Nina and the 99 Red Balloons. And when people really don't realize, or maybe they do, but they haven't listened to the words, this was not a catchy pop tune. And I mean, it was part of the Neue Deutsche Welle. And it was actually a resistance movement. And if you listen to the words, it is a hardcore anti-war song. And so those are the types of things of music that, you know, that come out of Germany as well, that a lot of people really don't think about very much. Or then another band. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And seems to go in waves too, right? So as I mentioned, we had those Schlager decades. It was right after the war, you know, people wanted something happy, something non-political. But then we had the Neue Deutsche Welle who really broke with that. And all of a sudden, these young people were making German language music that was to be taken seriously, that was dealing with serious topics. And then that kind of ebbed a little bit again.
And not only, sorry to interrupt, but not only was it just at Neue Deutsche Welle, but there was, you know, it was to be taken seriously, but out of that came a whole movement around punk music.
I mean, yes, absolutely. Like
Nina Hagen and some of those bands. And then that kind of softened, right? It's it just kind of, but it started this whole new type of music, this whole new music genre.
Yeah, we have Kraftwerk, we have Einstürzende Neubauten. And then really the hour of the German Liedermacher started, right? Yeah. Like Herbert Grönemeyer, Heinz-Rudolf Kunze. Yeah. I mean, if you really get into these lyrics, they are deep.
Very much so.
But they're still on a pop base, you know? So it's still danceable. It's still very singable, too.
Yes.
Well, let me go back in time a little bit. The old radio DJ is breaking out in me, if you will. It is quite interesting to think back into, let's say, the late 80s, early 90s, when Italian house, European house, techno slash the early beginnings of techno came about, which translated into ginormous festivals, actually, in Germany as well as Italy. Then also, of course, we have Rock am Ring, which is
a large rock
festival with all kinds of just superstar names.
Days of music.
Days worth of music. Then, of course, there are a couple of Austrians that I have to mention, particularly one made it just huge in the US, Falco. He had a number one hit in the US charts. I think it was Rock Me Amadeus, and then the Kommissar, which essentially translates to the sheriff, also made it pretty high up in the charts. And then we heard Opus, which was a Styrian group, who also got across the ocean, if you will, into the American charts in the top 40, Life is Life. Very poppy song to jump around with. There is no meaningful and deep message, but a party song kind of idea.
They were Austrian. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And you know what I just learned too is that when I actually looked, so on the GIA website is a link to the music in my on the music in my page, and they are top 10 singers from Germany. And what I didn't realize is that Mambo number 5.
Yes, Lou Bega.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lou Bega is German.
Lou Bega is German. Drove me nuts when I was on the air because this song was constantly requested.
Yeah.
Right along, Britney Spears, Hit Me One More Time, which sort of broke through at that point. But I think what it really gets to say is that yes, the marketing of the Oktoberfest, it makes so much sense because it is such an easy to translate message of Lederhosen and beer and Gemütlichkeit and just lockstep having fun with one another. Whereas there are so many layers to art and to music that are commonly getting forgotten because of the strength of positioning of the Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
So my, of course, advice would be to dig a little bit deeper and at the same time, very carefully choose the artists that you listen to. You can certainly learn some German here, which I suppose is always sort of the undercurrent, if you will. But of course, some of the messaging, particularly as Katrin said earlier, it can get quite political because we use music also as a political tool, more so than in the US, actually, which is...
political and slang, no? And mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, some topics that you don't play here on public radio, but in Germany, it's completely accepted.
Katrin, you'll be happy to see, according to Deutsche Welle, the top 10 rock bands from Germany, number one is Scorpions.
Yes. When the Winds of Change made it internationally.
Yes.
I did tell you, right, that the drummer bought my parents' used Mercedes.
Really?
He sat in our living room, yes. My parents have pictures. I'm like, I don't care, but great.
There you go. No, and number two is Rammstein, which is a very different band from the Scorpions.
Yes.
But I think also a name that is very familiar to U.S. music aficionados.
Right.
Well, and they've also been around forever.
Absolutely. And the part obviously is, you know, here in the US, you will mostly hear about the German artists that sing in English. And there are some German artists that sing exclusively in German. And then obviously that, you know, that has a different type of distribution than those who sing in English or who sing in both. Yep. And one thing just came to mind for me, and, you know, we do have to do an honorable mention for our friends in Switzerland. And there is specifically one song maker, one Liedermacher that I used to listen to that is Swiss, and his name is Stefan Zulke. And
that was my mom's favorite too.
And, but you know, he's a little older now, but other than that, I'm trying to think.
Oh, Faber, the one I mentioned first, Faber, I've used him in class too. He is Swiss as well.
He's Swiss.
Very contemporary, very interesting lyrics and videos.
Yep. And we'd have to ask our Swiss friends. But, you know, Switzerland then again is obviously influenced not just by the German music and musicians, but you know, there's a lot of pop and music that comes out of Italy that even in Germany we listen to, and I'm sure in Austria, and we all sing a lot, you know some songs, know about five words that we understand, but you know, there are some pretty popular and famous Italian musicians all over Europe, and then obviously French in Switzerland as well. On that note, speaking of music, again, check out the link on our website called Musik im Mai. This year is Beethoven, the year of Beethoven. So, you know, obviously some classical music that shouldn't be forgotten and that goes beyond. And so you'll see some stuff throughout the year as the 250-year anniversary of Beethoven comes around. Completely different style of music from everything that we just talked about, but certainly world-renowned.
Claudia, what do we actually have on the events? In our current situation, of course, it's incredibly difficult to forecast what, when, how, and where. What is the current status? How much can we say before we have to ask people to be patient and wait for our newsletters as we get to know the situations?
Yep. So obviously everything's been moved online. So this throughout this month of May, it's called Music in Mai. And the first event that we have planned for that is actually on May 11th, Monday, May 11th. And we're doing a Facebook Live event with Joey Johnson, who plays accordion. So back to the traditional, almost a little bit stereotypical type of music. But that's the first event that is happening on Monday, May 11th with Facebook Live. Joey Johnson and his accordion, which, by the way, was invented in 1822 in Berlin. So it is a very German instrument. The other thing that we've moved online is we unfortunately had to cancel our asparagus dinner. Those of you who've been to Germany in the spring will know that April, May, June, somewhere around there, and kind of crossing all months, is asparagus season in Germany. And you will find dishes with white asparagus everywhere. And so we had planned an asparagus dinner. Unfortunately, that had to be canceled. So some of us contributed some of our recipes. So again, on our website, you will find some favorite recipes to make with asparagus. In this case, mostly green asparagus, because white asparagus is difficult to get here in the US.
But I would like to insert that as a good German, I'm growing asparagus in my garden, of course. This year, this year for the first time, I've gone down the white asparagus route. So I faithfully covered it up with sand as it's growing, and it is fabulous. And we all know the fresher asparagus is anyhow, the better it is. But white asparagus in Minnesota, fresh from the garden, it's hard to beat.
Wow. Dinner at Katrin's house.
Whenever this distancing thing is over.
No, I don't care. I'll come over. No, just kidding. So the other thing that we are working on is later on in May and going into June, when we normally have our Deutsche Tage. So we're still kind of trying to figure out how we can do that in a virtual way and in a virtual manner. So stay tuned for more information around that. We're still working on figuring out the best way to deliver programming and information and content to you in the beginning of June. But in the meantime, things that have been moved online almost seamlessly are the German classes. You know, you just heard Günther and Katrin talk about in the beginning how well it's gone with classes. So we have our summer classes that were just posted on our website. And we still have a shorter session called Deutsch at Home that are online only classes that are also that are actually starting next week. So take a look at our class offering and listen to some of our podcast episodes so you don't have too much of a withdrawal until you can come back to the GDI and see us at the house.
One of the classes that I'm particularly looking forward to is the pronunciation class that are coming up throughout the summer, which I think pronunciation, just to for confidence sake already, makes a lot of sense to know how to pronounce certain things, to not stumble over your own words as I commonly do, and to be able
in any language.
In any language, yes. Even in non-verbals, I usually stumble over it. Yeah. Thanks, Claudia. but
we all do.
I think that is certainly something that I cannot emphasize enough, that would be really helpful to just dial in the pronunciation difficult, on semi-difficult words, simply because the one thing that usually gets you frazzled is when you mispronounce something, then the person in all earnest, really trying to be helpful, still asks, can you please repeat that? And that's when the confidence gets lost.
Yep. So, yep. So check out the schedule and, you know, keep an eye on our website. We are updating it regularly. And as soon as we have information about upcoming programs and events, the website is always the best place to look.
Sounds fantastic. Well, Catherine, you have to skip out because dinner, white asparagus.
Not tonight.
Not tonight. And then you have to teach a class.
Teach.
Indeed, yes.
So we'll just wrap this for today with ominously no outro music. I'm probably going to cut that in magically somewhere along
the way. Cut something, please.
Yes. Ladies, thank you so much for once again joining us on this very, very remote recording. Catherine, enjoy dinner. Have fun teaching.
I shall. Have a good night. Schönen Abend noch.
Claudia, thank you very much.
Yeah, danke. Tschüss.
Tschüss.
And this is Michael saying good night.